So I'm sitting here on the 14th of June, 2020, with Colby hiding, and we're gonna talk a bit about the event yesterday, the accident at Castle Rock, just outside of Leavenworth, Washington. And we're gonna do this in kind of three segments. The first segment will be sort of pre-event questions and discussions, attributes, if you will. Then the second part will be kind of a relating of the actual climb and subsequent accident itself. And then the third part will be kind of a post-event debriefing of sorts. And in that portion, we'll kind of focus a bit more on you know, judgment and feelings and those kinds of things, along with aftermath of the whole event itself. So I'm going to start by asking Colby to respond to a few questions or considerations that I've made note of here, with the understanding that hopefully these will answer as we go through this on several levels. The who, what, where, when, why, and how part of this sort of discussion we're going to have. So, Colby, the first one I want to ask you about is what sort of prior planning went into your trip, or decisions and choices that, you know, made you choose, first of all, Castle Rock, and second of all, that particular route?
So we picked Castle Rock mostly because it's not a very far drive considering other multi-pitches, and since it's not that far off the road, it's not a very long day because we wanted to do it as more of just a morning trip. So I think that was some of our purpose in choosing that, and it's a really cool area to climb in. And then we chose Sabre mostly because my dad has done that before, and it just seemed like kind of a cool route on the backside, and it just seemed like kind of cool, so we decided to do that one, mostly because of prior knowledge of doing it before.
Were you intending to do multi-pitch from that stance where you started out, or just the first pitch?
No, we were going to do both pitches to
okay.
the top.
Okay. And I guess a question, it's changed certainly since I did that route a couple of times, perhaps, is were you using bolts or your own pro?
Our own protection.
Okay. Okay, so you're putting in your own pro.
Yeah.
Primarily cams?
Yeah, we had all cams.
All cams. Okay. All right. I'm curious here, because this is a conversation about planning ahead of time. Have you and your dad ever, separate from any specific climb, have you and your dad ever talked about sort of the what-if scenario, if either you or he got hurt, and what sort of steps or actions you should take, and what order you might take them in?
Yeah, we've had a couple of talks about that. So we've talked about before, like, what's the first thing you have to do, like, especially in rock climbing, which is the first thing to do is try to get them to respond at least in any way, no matter what it is. So even if that's just a groan or something, then you know at least they're okay. And the next one, at least in that situation, is try to get him off the rock, or at least to a better position.
Safe?
If there's a ledge or something that he can get to, just somewhere where he can kind of compose himself. He's not just hanging there. Or if you're really anywhere, try to get him to a safe spot.
Got it.
And then the next thing to do would probably be see if there are people around you that can help, because that makes it a lot easier. And then, if not, you basically have to decide of multiple things. So if it's just you and one other person, you have to decide, can I leave this person alone to go get help? Or do I need to stay with them the whole time?
For first aid purposes.
Yeah. Is he in a condition where he can compose himself to be there by himself for however long it takes to go get help?
Okay, a couple of questions on timing. You chose this climb to be on the 13th, and you chose to begin early in the day. Were your intentions to be off the rock or off the route by midday?
Yeah.
Okay. And you chose the 13th because?
The weather looked nice for this weekend, and it was just kind of Sunday we wanted to do some other things, okay. So both days looked nice, so okay. We just decided Saturday.
On the east side, right.
Yeah.
Right. And weekends are still a focus because of your dad's work, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we also went early just so we could try to beat other people, too.
To the route.
Yeah, because we don't want to be, like, having to wait for
Got
people because that is a popular route there.
Right. Correct. So going into this, a couple of questions. When you got over there, I'm curious, what time did you leave the car to head up the way trail, the access trail?
8 o'clock, maybe.
8 o'clock, okay. And then you were at your stance or position at 8:30?
Yeah, probably starting to climb at 8:30.
Okay, and was anybody else on your route?
There were two guys that were pretty much, when we got there, they were just about to finish the first pitch. So when we got there, one guy was already at the top and the other guy was about halfway done. So we probably started when they were starting the next pitch.
Got it. Did they go on up the second pitch?
Yeah, they did. They did the whole thing.
And walked off the
yeah.
back.
You can't rappel the first pitch. It's too long. So unless you did it in sections, but there's no bolts to rappel off, so you kind of have to go all the way up and then walk down.
Okay. Talk to me about, besides your own pro, what length rope were you using? Do you know how many meters or how many feet? Was it a 50-meter rope or a 60-meter rope? Do you know?
I want to say it was 60.
Okay. 60 is closer to 200-foot rope.
Yeah.
Plenty of rope. And then a lot of rock climbing is done on a 50-meter rope as well.
Yeah, I think it was a 60, but...
And do you know, what was it?
It was a 9.2.
Okay, 9.2, okay. So, on the light side.
Yeah, definitely something on the lighter side, just for carrying up purposes and...
Now, a rope that's a 9.2, at least my understanding would be also a rope that would be a bit more elastic in the event of a fall.
Yeah, definitely stretches a bit more.
So you wouldn't have as much of a jolt on that rope.
No, not compared to like if you're using
11,
a 10.
Or a 10 and a half.
A 10 and a half.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And the weather was good at that early hour? Was it clear?
It was like partly cloudy, but no rain. It was perfectly dry.
Any
no,
wind?
Barely any. I mean,
okay.
Maybe like a slight breeze, but
And what do you
no.
think the temperature might have been? 50s?
Probably mid-50s.
Okay. All right. Good. You went directly from home and you drove directly to the climbing site,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Oh, was
yeah.
that how many? 2 hours?
2 hours, yeah.
Okay. And for the climb itself there, as you got underway, a question just in kind of this is a judgment question on your part. How was everybody feeling with regard to health and fitness and energy-wise? How did you both feel like you were up to the task?
Yeah, we both felt good.
Okay. Okay. All right, great. Great. Anything you want to add to sort of the pre-event sort of discussion that you can think of in terms of, you know, getting yourself in position before the climb actually began?
I mean, not really.
All right. Well, if something comes to mind, you know, go ahead and sing out and let me know, because we can inject that anywhere along the course of our discussion. Okay, well, for purposes of understanding, we're going to move on to part two of our sort of debriefing discussion here, visit, and we'll talk about the climb, the sequence of actions as to get underway, and then ultimately we'll talk about the accident itself. So, for starters, I'd like you to tell me, once you arrived at the stance for the first pitch,
mm-hmm.
tell me what you guys had decided and what you were going to do.
So, our plan was, my dad was going to lead it, set up an anchor at the top of the first pitch, then I would follow
at the ledge,
then I was going to follow in clean.
Okay. And between the stance, the belay stance,
mm-hmm.
and the first ledge, do you have any idea what the vertical gain is in that part, roughly?
It's a lot. I mean, it's probably something like 130, 140. It's a long pitch. You can't rappel down it without a very
double
long
ropes
rope.
Or yeah. Got it. Right. A single rope's not going to give you enough to rappel.
Yeah, you'd have to rappel halfway down and set up a new anchor.
Got it. Okay. So this is, if that's true, which I'm sure you're correct, then the number of pieces of protection on that route to get from the belay stance to the ledge was going to be, what, a dozen pieces?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. And when you were assuming the belay,
mm-hmm.
First of all, were you anchored to something, or were you just using rope drag and body weight?
I was just using rope drag and body weight.
For your anchor position.
Mostly because that rope's a bit more elastic, so if somebody does fall, you don't feel the jolt quite as much. And I actually, another thing that I did was I could put my foot up on the rock in front just to help brace a bit more, just in case.
And have you caught your father before?
I've caught him falling on lead before and falling pretty much on everything.
And what's the weight disparity between the two of you? I'm curious. What's he weigh?
It's probably like 70 pounds.
I was going to guess 60, but you think it might be closer
to
70?
Yeah, I think it's 70.
Okay. All right.
I've actually been pulled off the ground before, and it's not that bad, mostly because a lot of the times it's not that long of a fall, so maybe you get pulled off a little ways, but I've never had a problem holding on when there's a lot of pull.
All right. And I think earlier in a conversation you and I had over in Wenatchee, said that it ended up having a fair amount of noticeable drag.
Yeah, I barely, it felt like catching somebody way lighter than me, because there was so much rope drag that I basically caught nothing. I mean, when I saw him fall, I was prepared to catch his full weight, but I didn't really have to catch any of it.
And what sort of belay device were you using?
Just your standard belay device. Nothing special like a Grigory or anything.
It was a Grigory or
no? No, it was not. Just a normal loop belay device.
Okay. All right. Wasn't a figure eight. It was just a...
Yeah. Just a straight, put it through the hole, lock it.
Right. Okay.
Just that. I don't use Grigory on...
Do you know who the manufacturer of the device was?
Black Diamond, I think. Okay. I don't use Grigory on lead because it's more for top rope, because on lead you have to open it to let rope out, which is really annoying to do. So it's good for top rope, but hard for lead.
Okay. All right. So how far apart do you think the pro was being placed, as far as you could tell from your stance? What's your rule of thumb when you climb and do that?
It's probably something like, for me climbing, it's like 8 feet.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's obviously not an exact science.
Sure, of
but
course.
It's something like 8 to 10, because any more than that is too far.
Too far.
So, I mean, everything that he was placing so far was probably about 8 feet apart. So, like every 3 or 4 moves.
So how far up from in the total vertical, let's say that was 130 feet, at what point did he come off, roughly speaking? Halfway? A third of the
no,
way? Two-thirds of the
probably 100 feet up. And actually, I know it's about 100 because our rope was the perfect length to drop him all the way to the ground. And we have like a 200-foot rope. So my best guess is 100, just based on how much slack there was.
Ah, I get you.
Because we were...
So you had enough rope
We lowered him, and the guy who helped got him down was like, give me slack, and I'm like, the knot on my rope is literally on my belay device.
Got
so
it.
We had just enough. So it was
okay.
About 100.
Okay. somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 feet.
Yeah.
Okay. So that means he probably had 10 to a dozen pieces of pro out.
I want to say by then he had about 9 or 10.
Okay.
Something like that. I don't know. Probably 8 to 10. I couldn't see that right. well, but from
you were at the
I was at the base. Yeah.
Right. If you're at the base, the first part is a kind of a big lump buttress, right?
Yeah.
In front of you, and that sort of obscures your view.
Yeah.
Of the entire roof.
So I mean, it's my best guess, but based on when he was placing, it was probably 8 or 9. I'm guessing something around
and
that.
And he was, I'm going to assume, and you might know better. But my assumption is that he was extended, getting ready to put the next piece in.
He was about one move away. So he was on one side of the ledge, and the crack was about one move over. So he couldn't quite reach it. He needed to make about one step over, then he could reach in place.
Yeah, okay. Do you have any knowledge? I guess we're getting on to the accident here, so we'll kind of walk through the accident part.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested in what you saw, what you heard. I'm even interested in any kind of assumptions that you might make too.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can throw whatever you want out, and we'll consider that surely
mm-hmm.
as to possibilities. So first question is, do you think what released were his hands or his feet or both?
I think it was his feet, because right before he fell, he was looking for handholds for 30 seconds before he fell. He kind of got to this hard spot, and so he couldn't find any handholds. So I'm assuming when he was looking, one of his foot slipped, and he didn't have handholds, really. He was kind of just standing on his feet. So my guess is one of his feet slipped.
My guess earlier, when I was pure speculation, was the same. I thought that the likelihood that, you know, where he came off first was his foot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My speculation is also right foot, because he basically everything that got hit was his right side mostly. So my guess is his right foot slipped and it kind of spun him. And as he got spun, he landed with everything on his right side down.
Right.
So if you're up on a wall, right foot slips, he spun
to
his right.
You to
it spun him to his right, and then he landed basically on his head, shoulder area.
Right. Clearly, if he's on a diagonal like that, there's going to be some pendulum effect. But you couldn't see any of this.
My best guess is the pendulum effect didn't have, he was kind of against an arete when he fell, so my guess is there was so much rope drag because he couldn't pendulum, because he was hitting the wall to the side. Like, okay. You have an arete and he was hitting it with the right side of his body, and that stopped him from swinging back, and that was why there was so much rope drag. Which actually was probably a good thing too, that he wasn't swinging.
Yeah, I think it might have been a good thing. Right. Did he give any warning, like falling or anything like that, when he started to come off?
Yeah, I heard him swear.
Or did he, or like tension or anything like that?
I saw him looking for moves, and I actually took a little bit just in case, and then I basically heard the like scream of him, like his foot slipping off, and that was when I instantly like sat in a squat position and was just waiting for the rope to get
had
tight.
Had he asked prior to that for either tension or slack along the way?
No, I did it on my own.
So
just
you were
in
feeling
case.
Him?
I wasn't quite feeling, because we had quite a bit of slack, so I got it a little tighter, but it wasn't to the point where I was feeling his movements. It wasn't that tight.
Okay, so would you surmise, this is kind of speculative, that he was that he was somewhat constrained by tension in the rope, or what do you think? I mean, obviously, you know, when you climb with someone and you feel the rope, you can
mm-hmm.
tell when they want it and when they don't want it.
Yeah.
And if they call out to you that they're at a tough spot or tension, then clearly you tighten things
yeah.
up. And if they're at a point where they're trying to reach the next piece of protection, they might ask for slack.
Slack.
But you, none of that communication took place.
No. I did it on my own, but I didn't take a whole lot because I just wanted to make sure that if he went for a big move, I didn't yank him back down.
Right, you didn't inhibit the move. Okay. All right. So describe for me from the time he fell that you knew he was off, that and at that point you saw him fall.
I saw him at the very start of his fall, and then...
You saw him come free.
Basically, I saw him come free, and before he even hit the ground on the first land, I couldn't see him. All I saw was him peel off, and then right away he went. I couldn't see him anymore.
So you say he hit the ground. He didn't deck out.
No, he hit... Like, he's up above the rock, and I couldn't see the first impact on the rock.
Got it.
All I saw was him fall back a little ways, and then... I couldn't see him.
Do you think he fell over backwards, or did you just think he came off?
I think he kind of hit side.
I mean, obviously, you said he rotated to the
right. Yeah, I think he kind of landed all on his side, because, like, you can definitely tell that his whole right side is
the
worst.
Picture, yeah.
Like, his right eye and head.
Shoulder.
And
elbow.
And arm and elbow. So, I think he hit the side, and then kind of, like, I actually think he went onto his back. And I think that's what caused his back to be so injured. But I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
The main thing that I speculate is that the first impact on the rock was to his head, shoulder, and arm on the right side.
Okay.
Everything after that, I don't really know.
Okay, now he's reached, literally, in this case, and I don't mean as a pun here, but he's reached the end of the rope. And he's come to a stop.
Yeah.
And you can see him now?
I can see him now. He came out from the arete.
Okay. And what did you see?
He was flipped upside down, kind of at a diagonal angle down.
Okay. And was he up against the rock?
Yeah, he was up against it. No, I mean, I don't think he was, like, laying on it. He was kind of just touching it. There wasn't a lot of pressure on the rock.
Okay. But it wasn't hanging out.
No, he
like
wasn't.
You wouldn't hang out from an overhead.
Yeah, he wasn't free hanging.
Okay.
But he wasn't really like laying just on like all his weight was still on the rope.
On the harness.
Yeah, on the rope and the harness.
Okay, and at that point, was it very obvious to you that he was hurt bad?
I mean, I knew he was hurt, but I couldn't really tell to what extent just because he was still really like he was still 70, 80 feet above me. So, no, I couldn't. I knew he was hurt, but to what extent, I wasn't sure, because I couldn't see his face either, because his face was actually turned away from me, so I didn't really know to what extent.
Was he moving?
So, at first, he wasn't moving. I could see his chest moving in and out, so I knew he was breathing, but he wasn't moving at all, and then probably I called a bit, and then I kind of saw his legs start to move a little bit, so... Probably for a good 30 seconds he was out and then kind of started to move just a tiny bit.
And how did you, I think when I asked you earlier, you said, did you start to lower at that point? Or, because you said he got reoriented so he wasn't inverted. Explain that to me.
Yeah, so the two other guys, so the first thing that happened is I saw him fall. I yelled to him a little bit and then yelled like for help and if anybody could hear me. And at that point, kind of two guys were walking down who were above us. And so...
So they came from your
right. They came from my right
so
around.
So they finished the climb.
Yeah, they had finished the climb. And so I started to lower him a bit. And then the guys came down and they're like, keep lowering him. We'll go to like where he's going to come. So we started to lower him and we tried to tell him to kind of try to right himself a little bit. Because we didn't want any blood going to his head a lot. So we kind of got him like sideways and then he got like kind of on this little ledge. We finally got him to roll off that. And once he rolled off that, it got a lot steeper. And that's where it really, once he rolled off that ledge, that's where he started to flatten out.
So on the lowering, did he take any action, positive action himself, or was it all passive?
Yeah, no. Well, he was definitely trying to push with his legs off the rock.
Like you would on a rappel.
Yeah, thing. Like he was kind of trying to push himself off the rock with his legs a little bit. So it was definitely positive.
So he knew he was being lowered.
Yeah,
he was trying to assist you in that regard.
Like when he was on the ledge, he had to roll himself off, and he kind of started to roll himself off. and then he was kind of walking down with his legs a little bit. Okay. So, yeah, he was definitely being positive repelling.
And you're saying that the guys went, you did the lowering at that point,
the
way, and the two guys went over to receive it.
Yeah.
And then, one of these guys, I understand, was an EMT fireman?
Yeah, that was the main guy who went down and got him, was the EMT.
How far away was he on the end of the rope relative to your belay stance?
40 feet? He was pretty far away.
So, like, if we're sitting here, what, the barbecue? Like,
yeah, probably.
Okay. All right. That's about 40. That is about 45 feet.
Yeah.
Okay. So the other guy's over there getting ready to receive him.
Yeah.
And you're lowering him to him. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then what happened?
So once we got him down, one of the guys who wasn't the EMT went up and went basically to a point where he had service and called 911.
From where?
When
did
you're...
Did he go back up the trail? Or did he go around to the front of
He went. He went around to the front, and when you're at the front, you're at kind of a high point of the trail, and he got enough service there.
Is that right by Jello Tower?
Yeah.
Okay. Because Jello Tower is almost dead center.
Yeah, it's right about there.
Yeah, okay. And he called from there?
Yep.
Okay, in the meantime, what are you and the other gentlemen's?
So first off, we're checking him out, so... The first thing we did was we sat him down, we asked him a couple questions just to see if he could remember anything. He pretty much remembered his name, and that was basically about it at that time. And then the next thing we did was took off his helmet, and then we got a spare t-shirt and tried to, like, get him to put it on the gash on his head.
Did anybody protect his neck or head like that?
Yeah, we had one of the guys, try to, like, keep him as still as possible.
Got it.
Well, I went and grabbed a t-shirt to try to put on his head to stop some of the bleeding.
Okay.
And then at this point, once we got him kind of situated, we were going to try to see if he could at least stand up and maybe walk just a little bit. And so, well, I actually went all the way down the trail and met the EMTs. And then David and Tyler, who were the two guys, tried to see if he could walk even just a little bit.
Stop. David and Tyler. Did you get their last names?
No, I didn't. I didn't really have time.
And where are they from?
They're from Graham.
From Graham?
Yeah, that's where Tyler works as a firefighter.
So Tyler is a firefighter in Graham, Washington.
Yeah.
Okay, we can find out who that is.
I was going to do that.
And their names again?
David.
So Dave, that's easy to remember.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got two Davids right now.
Yeah.
In this event.
Yeah.
Okay, David and Tyler, and what would you say about them? How old were they?
Mid-20s. They looked pretty young,
young fellows.
Not right out of college, but definitely haven't been out of college for too many years.
Okay.
Mid-20s.
And did, would Tyler's the fire person?
Yeah.
Fireman. Did you get the impression that he knew his stuff in terms of first aid?
Yeah, he definitely, I don't think he knew everything, but he definitely knew his stuff.
Okay, all right. Anything else that you heard or saw, during this time? Like, what, when they were attending to him, and now you've got him down, he's sitting position?
Mm-hmm.
And you went where to get... Did you go all the way down to the parking lot?
I went all the way down to the parking lot to show the EMTs where to go.
And the other two guys stayed with your dad?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and how long would you say from the time that the guy left to make the call to when the EMT folks showed up on the parking lot?
Oh, 10 minutes. The EMT beat me down, and I was sprinting down the trail.
Yeah.
So they were very fast.
Great. So they were ready to go when you got to them.
Yeah, they were ready.
So you turned right around and brought them up.
Yeah.
Okay.
I brought up the main EMT doctor, and then I brought up a sheriff. Those were the first.
Did you have to go back and forth for those?
Those were the first two guys that I brought up.
Were they together?
They were together. That was the first group of people. I just brought up two people, which was a sheriff and the main EMT guy. And then the other guys basically followed. So we had David go back up and stand at the highest point and show them where to go.
Got it.
Show the rest of the EMTs.
And how big was the group of responders?
10 to 12 people.
Okay. And how many vehicles responded, do you recall?
2 sheriff cars, 1 ambulance, and an EMT truck.
Okay.
Plus, I think there were a couple, there was like 2 volunteers, and I think they had just regular cars.
Did they bring the Stokes litter up on the first look, or did they wait till they saw?
No, the last group that came up was the people who brought the litter. They were basically...
So they were radioing to each other?
Yeah, because the reason they sent up the main EMT and the sheriff was to see, okay, what exactly do we need? And then the next group was everybody else that came up with all the equipment they needed.
Right. And this is, for the sake of emphasis, this was a Stokes litter with a single wheel underneath.
Yeah.
Okay. Like a mountain bike wheel or something like that.
Like a snow tire, basically.
What'd they do once they got to him and the doctor? What'd the doctor do?
So the doctor did pretty much the, like, very similar things that we did. So
put a cervical collar on him?
So the first thing we did was asked him a couple questions.
And by then, how was he responding?
He was responding better. Like, he still forgot a lot of stuff, but he remembered more. And then... we bandaged his head up was the first thing, and while we were doing this, we still had Tyler, who was holding his head still. And then once the people got up with the Stokes basket and litter, that's when they brought the collar up.
Got it. Now, during this whole time, was he more or less in a sitting position?
Yeah.
Until the doctor got there?
Yeah, pretty much the entire time.
The entire time. Yeah. And the doctor kind of kept him sitting.
Yeah, the doctor kept him sitting.
Okay.
The only time he laid down was once we got the litter there and put him in the litter.
Okay, that makes sense to me, too. All right. And now he's on the litter and everybody, did you collect all the equipment that you had at hand? What did you do?
So basically once the other group of people got up there, the people with the litter and all everything like that, I got our gear and basically ran down with all of our stuff, dropped it off, and came back up. And probably by the time I came back up, that's when they had fully secured him in the litter and were starting to move him off.
I think I heard you say that you left some pro up on the route.
Yeah, because...
You obviously got the rope back.
Yeah, we got everything back but the couple pieces we left.
Okay, all right. And those were cams?
Yeah.
Camming devices?
Yeah.
Okay. And did the camming, I'm just a quick question about did all the pros stay in place or did any of it pull?
Nope. Everything stayed in place.
Everything stayed in place. Okay. And I assume that you're using quick draws on the cams or something, slings on them?
We're using webbing and then a carabiner.
Got it. Okay. How long did it take them to get him down from the time they really started rolling him downhill?
30 minutes.
Okay, and how many, and everybody's holding on to the litter on all sides?
Yeah, so at first, the first part of it is pretty rocky, so that was, took a long
that's
time.
That's tough, right.
But once we got the wheel on and the trail got a bit nicer, then it definitely
over
went a lot faster.
To the left side.
Yeah,
left
once,
of center.
Once you get like in
left of center.
Once you get in front.
There's that one big long step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you get in front of the rock and you're doing the switchbacks, it gets a lot easier where we can put the wheel on and
right. It
went a lot faster.
Right. So you said that you ran down to the car and you put all the gear away and came back up to them. Were they still up at the...
Yeah, so basically what happened when I was gone was they finished checking him out and then they put him in the litter and got the neck brace on him. So I didn't see when they were putting him in the litter or putting the neck brace on. That's the part that I missed.
Got it. Now, and then you went back. So you made the entire descent with them and your dad in the litter.
Yeah, and during that descent, I carried a bunch of David and Tyler's stuff because they were helping carrying the litter. So I basically carried their backpack, rope bag, all that stuff.
Okay. All right. Anything else you care to add? You got to talk to me about what happened in the parking lot.
So basically our whole way down, they weren't sure where they were going to send him, if they were just going to send him to Leavenworth or to Wenatchee. And then they were, so their original plan was to send it by ambulance to Wenatchee Central. And then I couldn't go in the ambulance, so David and Tyler offered to give me a ride there. So that was the original plan. Then they decided that they needed to helicopter him because they didn't want to make sure he had internal bleeding. So they helicoptered him, and then
the So wait, did they make that decision at the parking lot?
Just before the parking lot, probably 10 minutes before we got to the parking lot.
Okay, so now you're at the parking lot. So how long did you have to wait?
No time at all.
The helicopter showed up quick.
Yep, it was there pretty much right when we got there.
And they stopped traffic?
Yep, they shut it. They got a perimeter about a fourth of a mile in either direction, landed the helicopter, we got in it and went to Wenatchee.
And how long do you think it took to load up and get airborne?
Oh, 3 minutes.
Okay.
Very short amount of time. It was not long at all. We basically landed, I dropped off the stuff at the car and got a couple things and then got in the helicopter.
All right.
So it was did you
have your dad's ID and wallet and
I had
phones.
So what I needed to grab for the car was his wallet because I wanted to make sure I had that. So I had his phone, my phone, car keys, and wallet, and that was it.
Okay, got it.
Everything else got left
in the car.
So
you guys were both in your climbing gear otherwise when you
went
to the hospital.
Yeah, so I did change out of my rock climbing shoes and took my harness off, but other than that, I was still in, like, just shorts and a T-shirt.
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, now I'll ask you sort of a closing question. In regards to that point, up to the point where you got aboard the helicopter, is there anything else you can think of to add to kind of any other details that come to mind?
I don't know, nothing much.
How many people showed up with the helicopter? In the helicopter? The pilot and another person?
The pilot and two other people.
Were in the helicopter?
Yeah.
Were they medical people?
Yep.
Did the doctor go with you? That had taken care of him up on the...
No.
No.
Because he can't, because he's still a EMT, so he still has to be ready for another emergency.
Got it. So he went back to
the people they bring in the helicopter, not the pilot, but the other two people, they're certified EMTs.
Got
and
it.
Actually, the pilot that was there was an EMT, too.
Okay. The picture I looked at of the helicopter, I mean, I obviously don't know. Totally. Remember how I asked you if it was a Huey, which would be really old, or a Bell Jet Ranger? It looked like it was a Bell Jet Ranger.
Yeah.
And you described the configuration that once you were in the helicopter and you were from where you were sitting and looking forward to where the pilot was on the right side up front?
Yeah.
Okay.
I sat on the left next to him.
You sat on the left up front?
I was in the cockpit. I was sitting in the co-pilot seat.
Right, in the left seat.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, okay, got it. And then behind you?
Directly behind me was the litter.
Well, your dad was still in the litter.
Yeah, and then the right side.
Did they keep him in the litter while he went?
Yeah, they kept it. They took him out of the... They kept him in the litter, but they took the spokes out and everything. They basically, the EMTs...
Right, they took the wheel off.
Yeah, they took the wheel off, and then they took off the main frame, because the helicopter has a frame with it. They kept the same bedding and all that stuff, though.
Okay, and they put him in, and he's strapped down?
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's one more guy, and he's sitting in the back?
Yeah, so right next to my dad, there's...
Oh, both of them. Both two.
There's two benches that face each other, so one is... The backs are together, the pilot seat and the person behind
it.
Then the other seat is facing the passenger in the back.
Okay, so they stayed with your dad.
Yeah.
Okay. How long did the flight take?
8 minutes.
To get back to the...
Yep.
Okay, and did they have a big landing pad?
Yep, right on the roof.
Right on the roof. And were they waiting for him, waiting for you guys when you
yep.
came?
Yep, there were two people that were waiting for us. One was a nurse and one was a security guy from the hospital.
Got it. Okay. All right. Okay, we're going to move on to sort of segment 3, which is post-event. I'd like to have your sense of things going forward, and then toward the end of this we'll have a few comments, questions, and judgment. But first of all, once you touch down and they wound down a little bit, tell me about what happened then in terms of the hospital experience from the time you touched down.
So it was pretty much, they got him off first. That was the first thing they did.
And before you got off.
Rolled him in, yeah. And then I got off. I got off with the pilot. So the two of us went down into the hospital together. And then...
So was your dad by then already been transported down to the ER?
Yeah, he was already in a room. So when I got down there, he was in the room already. Probably only like 2 minutes ahead of me.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
And then...
So go ahead and tell me what you saw.
So the first couple things they did was... So the first thing was IV.
Yep.
That's the normal first thing. The next thing was just checking out the outside. So... Making sure there's nothing super visible on the outside they can see. Making sure his vitals are fine, so hooking him up to all the hospital machines.
Monitors.
Yeah. And then once they did that, the next thing they did was x-rays. And then they did
CAT scan?
They did a CAT scan, and then...
I thought I understood that they maybe did two of them. Did they do two of them?
Yeah, they did a second one that I can't remember the acronym for it. It was to check if...
How fast did the... What would be the time frame you thought that there... Once he was in the hands of the people in the ER room... To do these various things, to palpitate him and to check him for external issues...
Yeah.
And do vital signs and get the IV hooked up. What would you say the time was for all of that?
So I think the first set of x-rays was probably about an hour with everything, something like that, and then...
How'd they x-ray him? Just roll him in?
Just...
Was he prone by now, laying down?
Yeah, so they have a moving x-ray machine that they wheel into his room the x-rays.
Okay.
And so those took an hour, and then probably the next ensuing hour was them doing all the other scans... So there were about 3 hours, roughly, at the hospital. So the first was all the very first things they do. So IV, hooking him up, and then the just basic x-rays. The next one was the more advanced one, like the CAT scan and figuring out. And then the third one was getting him basically, so he got stapled in his head. He got his hand bandaged, and then he basically got wiped down. So that was about the breakdown of what happened in each of the 3 hours.
Okay. That's over a period of around 3 hours.
Yeah, something like that.
2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
So tell me, back up a little bit. Tell me, in terms of communicating out to your mom, back to your mom, tell me where that began and how that worked out, including once you got to the hospital. So tell me, where did it begin?
So the first...
On the trail or not?
The first communication was on the trail. I didn't have service, but one of the sheriffs had service, so he texted her, and then...
What time was that?
Right before we started to lower him down. So
yeah, the litter?
Yeah, with the litter when we started to bring him down, so 9:30.
Yeah, so okay.
And then... The next contact was when I got to the hospital. So she responded to the sheriff and said she was coming. And then the next communication was at the hospital. I called her while she was driving.
You got a hold of her?
Yeah, I got a hold of her once I got to the hospital.
Okay.
And then the last communication was basically her texting me right before she got there.
Okay. Now, did you have to... come out to meet her, or did she...
No,
they let her in.
She got let in because she's immediate family.
Okay.
Because...
So she just identified herself...
Yeah,
and showed up at the room. Were you all still in the ER room?
Yeah, we were still in the ER room.
Okay.
Yeah, because since I'm not a legal adult, like, she can be let in, because she is a legal adult of...
Right.
So, they kind of needed an adult there.
Got it.
So, and then obviously I got let in because I was with him, so...
Correct. Understood.
Yeah. But my guess is normally if I went there after, they probably wouldn't have let me in.
What, besides the ER doctor, were there any other doctors that came in while you were there?
So the different people we had a main nurse who was there all the time. We had a couple other nurses who came in to do various things.
Came and went.
Yeah, basically came, like, people to do the x-rays and the CAT scans, those people. And then we had our main, so we had a main nurse, our main doctor, and then we had the neurosurgeon come in a little bit later, probably in the last
hour. What did he do?
So what they were trying to figure out was, like, how bad is the skull fracture and does he need to have surgery? As in, if it hit an artery, he would have to get surgery. So he basically came in and talked with him to say, okay, this is what happens.
Did he talk with your dad?
He needs surgery. Yeah.
Okay.
He talked with all three of us.
All right. And his decision was to stand by and wait?
Yeah, because they didn't seem like they needed to run out.
And he was available if he needed to be?
Yeah, he was available there.
He was on call.
Yeah. Okay. So we basically had two main people, the main nurse and doctor, and then a couple other people that came and went for various things.
So how long after you got into the ER room did the neurosurgeon show up to visit? First hour, second hour?
Third
hour?
So we had, because it was after we did the CAT scans.
Okay,
because
yeah,
the CAT scans were what gave us the idea.
That's
so
what he looked
it
at.
It was in the last hour, probably. Like 2 hours in.
Okay. All right. Now your mom's there.
Yeah.
Okay, and she got there, then it must be, what time?
1.5 hours after we were there.
So she got there around noon?
I think it was 12:30.
Okay, all right.
Actually, no, it was more like 12:45. Yeah, 12:45.
So anything else you can think of up to the point that your mom arrived before, from the time the helicopter let you and unloaded your dad till the point at which your mom arrived, is there anything else you can add to the treatment he got at that point? Was he conscious? Did he talk?
He was talking the whole time.
Okay. Was he talking to the help and the medical folks?
Yeah. He definitely had a hard time once we got him in the litter. That was probably the time where he was most out of it, when he was kind of laying down during that.
When the litter up on the hill or the litter at the helicopter?
The litter up on the hill, because it's right after it happened. And so I think that was when he was most kind of just out of it. Because obviously when he was sitting up, you know, he couldn't really fall asleep. But once he got sat down and kind of, that was the first time he got to relax since it happened. So that was probably the hardest time for him to stay awake. But once we got him...
Did they keep him awake? I mean, keep
yeah,
after
no,
him?
Yeah, no,
they kept after
they,
him.
They kept after him the whole time. They made sure he stayed awake. So, but once he got to the hospital, he pretty much like, I mean, he tried to sleep a little bit, but at that point they knew he was stable, so they didn't really care if he slept.
Did you happen to notice his vital signs when...
Yeah.
What were they?
Heart rate was 55 to 60, so definitely lower than normal, but
okay,
fine. And then I didn't really look at much else.
You don't know what the PO2, the little finger thing was? Will you get oxygen uptake or anything like that?
No, I don't really know. I don't really know because they don't label every single thing on that.
Did you hear blood pressure or anything like that?
The only one I know was heart rate for sure. And heart rate was like probably an average of 55.
Okay.
It floated between 50 and 60.
All right. All right, I'm just trying to think if there's any other questions to ask. Was there any discussion yesterday while you were in the ER in terms of prognosis, what to expect, that kind of thing, or was it still all up in the air?
It was definitely for the first 2 hours it was up in the air, but after that we kind of settled on like, here's the problem, here are like two options. Definitely the first 2 hours it was very up in the air.
What were you doing this time? Were you sitting, standing, walking around? What were you doing?
So I was sitting inside most of the time, and then I had to go outside for any of the x-rays or CAT scans or anything like that.
Of course.
I was either sitting inside or right outside.
Okay, and they had...
Yeah, they had...
They had facilities for you to use if you needed them, and okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, and there's nothing else at this point that comes to mind that needs to be added to the treatment part up to the time your mom arrived?
Not really.
Okay. Well, if you think of something, then sing out and we'll add it to the body of information. Well, let's take a kind of hesitant here pause for a moment, and then I think I want to talk about and visit some open-ended questions, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll see if I can stop this for a second. Hard to see.
You can't pause it. You just have to stop and make a new one.
No, you can pause.
No, I can't pause on mine.
Mine? Okay, mine.